Do you ever wonder when is the right time to bring on an associate? Or perhaps you want to have one day, but you don't know what you need to do first. We answer all these things, bringing on associates today, what metrics, what to do, what not to do, and what to expect when you do. You are listening to the Dental Practice Heroes podcast, where we create dental practices that are ran and driven by the team, affording us the freedom to practice less, stress less, and make more money. Hi, I'm Paul Etchison, author of two books on dental practice management, dental coach, and owner of a $6 million group practice in the south suburbs of Chicago. I want to teach you how to create a team-driven practice and achieve early financial freedom so you can have more time to do whatever it is that you love. Let's get started. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the DPH podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Paul Etchison, and I am joined by my legendary guys. I got Dr. Stephen Markowitz and Dr. Henry Ernst here, both proven dentist business owners that have done it and walked the walk. What is happening, guys? How are you guys doing?
Doing great, Paul. Glad to be here.
Doing excellent. Excited.
Awesome. So what we're going to do in these episodes is we are going to take apart a question and just get three different perspectives on it, because we've got Henry, who very quickly grew a practice and exited out, even though he's still there, but joined a DSO and cashed in, cashed out. I'm not really sure which would be in or out, but he cash is part of it.
Both.
You know,
both.
So, and then we got Dr. Steve, who is six or seven practices, Steve?
Six now.
Variable. He's waiting for his big windfall. I don't know if he's ever going to get it. He's just going to keep growing.
We'll see how strong Henry's advice is, and then we'll take it from there. Yeah,
right. Wow, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah,
no pressure, man.
So the question we're going to dive into today is that I think a lot of the podcast listeners, they're very interested in growing this sort of hands-off practice. We want all these things to generate income for us, like passively. We know dental practice ownership is not truly passive, but there are ways to make it more passive, and one of which is bring on some associates and have some people in that technician role doing the dentistry. So the question I want to open up to you, and I'll start with you, Henry, is when is a practice ready for an associate? And I guess, like, if someone was ready, what kind of things do they do to transition?
I'll take it from two ways to look at it. The first one is mentally. Once you bring an associate into a practice, the practice is never the same again. It's never the same. I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing, but you have to have a certain mentality. When you're the only practice owner, you've seen every single piece of dentistry that's gone through the practice. Now you're going to have somebody else. Now maybe it could potentially be problems. Are you willing to accept those problems? Are you willing to fix those problems? So that's one thing you have to, like, say. It's like Spider-Man. With great power comes great responsibility. Accept that responsibility. So take that first. I would say the second point is just like a lot of the metrics and stuff like that. When you're at capacity is one thing you can feel. You can just feel like, gosh, a patient wants to get on my schedule for a crown and it can't happen for like 3 or 4 weeks. That's not good. Second is just if I look at a positive metric of 40 new patients per doctor per practice. So if you're sitting there and you got 80 new patients a month, well, dude, you can afford to have an associate. Give them 40, right? And even my suggestion too, when we talk about this a lot, is if you really want to work less and have the most efficiency with associates, train yourself to be that pseudo specialist. This way, the new associates coming in, pretty much they're going to do the bread and butter dentistry. Maybe they'll refer you the really implant stuff where you can work one day a week. And now the practice is really kicking some butt. So mindset, make sure you've got the mindset that you are ready to accept this. And you're going to have to be a mentor sometimes. And you're going to have to be a lot of other mental hats that you're going to have to wear when an associate comes on board. You're also going to have to get the whole staff and team ready. That's a whole nother conversation. So that's the mental aspect. Metric wise, hey, I've got a lot of capacity issues starting to happen on the doctor side. Plus, I've got well enough patients.
What do you think, Steve?
The associate model is all I know, so I can definitely speak to it. I think there's like Henry had mentioned, there's definitely a number of patients. For me, I see once you're over that 1,300 to 1,500 active patients, there's enough dentistry to serve more than one dentist, if that's what you want. I was talking to one of my doctors this morning, and going to professional school, it's awesome. We have an incredible career. I wouldn't trade it for the world, but you got yourself a job, and a job is not a business. Once you move on from being a solo doctor owner to a multiple doctor practice, you now have a business. And that, I'm going to push you, Paul, that I don't see it as passive at all. I think it's just as active, and there are tons of problems and issues that come with having multiple providers, but you actually truly have a business and no longer have a job, and you have to treat it as such. So to build off of what Henry was saying, 1,500 active patients is a great metric. Having 100 exams, at least whether they're new patient or recare exams, having 100 exams to make sure that that doctor is going to have enough teeth to look at to have a busy schedule, because you want to make sure their schedule is busy. And then I think Henry said it perfectly. It's all about the mindset. You need to be able to be in a position to say, all right, I'm building a business and I'm not building my job. And to do that, I need to take a step in a different direction. And that different direction may mean in month 1 through 6, I may take just a little bit less home to build this business in a different way that allows greater growth of the business as a whole and not just what my schedule looks like. So for us, that's, is there enough active patients? Is there enough exams for that doctor to be doing? And how far booked out is it? Am I booked out more than 3 weeks? If so, then we got to find a way to get more capacity, whether it be adding a doctor or extending hours.
See, you know what I see a lot is I see these people and they want to bring on an associate dentist, and then they're looking, they're like maybe at that 50 new patient mark. And they're like, gosh, do I have enough for two people? But one thing I noticed, and I'm curious what you guys think about this, is that when you've been established at a practice and you're the owner, original solo doc, is that you don't need as many new patients to continue to stay busy. And you can kind of funnel most of them if you do it intentionally to the associate. But I think there's a lot of us that go into it with this, well, I don't want to lose money. How am I going to make money with an associate? Like, look at my overhead. I'm only taking home maybe 28 to 40% of every dollar in here. And if I'm going to pay associate 30%, what does that leave me? But I think what they miss is that you get some scale there because you don't need as many personnel to operate. Now you've got a high producer. What do you see? And I'll pass this one back to you, Steve. You've got tons of associates and you've completely just backed out clinically. I mean, you're not doing clinical at all anymore, right? Except for just
Wednesdays. Wednesdays. You can't call me on Wednesday because I'm very, very, very tooth centric there.
Okay.
I think to build upon what you were saying about the metrics of the business, dentistry is a revenue game and it's a variable expense game, meaning that whether we do 10 procedures a month or 100 procedures a month, our rent is what our rent is. So if we can shrink our fixed expenses and capitalize on our variable expenses because we're doing more revenue, there is going to be more left over at the end, whether it's 17% of $1,000 or 15% of $10,000, it's still going to be more as far as the dollar amount that's left over at the end if we're able to produce more out of the same space.
Yeah. What do you say to that, Henry?
Yeah. So as soon as the doctor comes on board, right, you have to have the mentality of rolling out the carpet, right? Getting your team, onboarding them correctly. Don't just throw them to the wolves. Get them onboarded correctly. Give them confidence, like in, because the armamentarium is different. It's a new atmosphere. It's a new group, right? Make sure they feel that they're supported. That's extremely important. Every time I've done this, it always jumps up the revenue. It always works. It just does. And I love the point that you made, Paul, is once you've been there for a while, sometimes we try to funnel every single new patient. I try to see zero new patients. You know, I work 2 days a week now and that's it. But every new patient goes to associates. But you still get the people who try to circumvent that and they say, I only want to see Dr. Etchinson. We accept that. We say, okay, we accept those requests, but that's still going to happen. But every time it's worked, we've done it, it works. The biggest thing that I noticed when I was at a point, like maybe you were mentioning younger in my career, where I said to myself, you know what? I'm working 4 days a week now. I'm going to take it to 2, which was extremely stressful. Oh my God, I'm going to lose money. I'm going to do this, but I'm doing it for the greater good of the practice. And I did it. And what was really cool was about 3 or 4 months later, the practice revenue shot through the roof. And I was working a lot less. Why? Because I was a better mentor. I was better at being the visionary of the practice to look at it from above and just kind of make sure things were good. And it just worked. And that's what I would advise anybody who's in that mode where they've got, like Steve said, they've got the metrics. They have to have that mentality. It works. Create a business. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but a lot of dentists feel like, yeah, I've got a great business. Technically, you don't. What happens if something happens to you? If something happens to you and you're not there or you go on vacation, the practice doesn't make anything. That's not a business. That's a job.
Yeah, it reminds me of Trent McCord and him tearing out his shoulder skiing or something. Was he skiing? I can't remember what he was doing. But
don't say shoulders. You know what? I actually have a really bad shoulder right now, and I actually have surgery. This is going to be a beta test, actually, because I'm going to be out for a few months.
Oh, man.
Henry, don't you see, though, also when you cut down, and this, I had to do it to see it. There was a long period of time where I was clinical 6 days a week. And then when I cut back, actually, and I look back at my numbers, I was doing the same amount of dentistry in 4 days that I was doing in six. Yeah. So I don't know if it was just because I was trying to shovel more crap into the same day, but it worked out that way. And I was like, wow, I was able to spend time on the business, do all those things that are actually beneficial. And I found out there's ways I could be more efficient.
Yeah. I call that the QVC effect. You know how like when you change the channels and you see like QVC selling stuff and like they say, oh, this watch is for sale for 5 more minutes, right? That's intentional to get your butt to do it. Well, now all of a sudden they're like, well, Dr. Ernst is only here 2 days a week, so you better get on that schedule or else it's not going to be for a long time. That's one thing that happens when you do that, that I've noticed.
How many QVC watches do you have is really the take home from this.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm a simple man. I've got like this, the Garmin that tracks you when you run and stuff. So no, I'm a one watch guy.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, you know, we know that about you.
This reminds me of like, I want to come back to how you said like with capacity, you just feel it. And looking back in my journey, I felt it too. And what spawned me to actually go, hey, I need an associate. I was interviewing. I wasn't finding the right people. And there was a certain point where I was just like, you know what? I'm about ready to put anybody in here because I can't do this anymore. I can't see it. And I felt it bad. But I almost wonder, looking back on it, if I could have brought on an associate way earlier than I actually did and before I felt it. And so, I mean, for me, I'm all about block scheduling, holding spaces for a finite amount of new patients in the schedule. And when you're scheduling 6 month recalls, if you've got nowhere to put them in 6 months and you're going 6 months a day, 6 months in 2 days, 6 months in a week, that's when it's time to expand capacity with hygienists. And one dentist can only serve so many hygienists. And then you eventually just kind of, that's my thing. I don't care about active new patients. And I'm sure it all correlates to some extent. But I could have done it much earlier. And then to speak on the thing of production wise, when I brought on my first associate, I wasn't trying to funnel her anything. And she wasn't that busy. And I was still seeing a ton of new patients. And then eventually I said, hey, like, do you mind like seeing more like just fillings appointments? Like I'd rather like to see less. And she's like, I'd love to. So I just decreased the amount of filling appointments I was willing to do. She got more busy. I stayed with the same production because I was doing more profitable stuff on less days. And the same experience that you guys both said is I made more money that year. And I was perfectly prepared to make less money, but I made way more.
I also think you don't need to take the plunge from one full-time doctor to two full-time doctors. There are plenty of people that actually enjoy and want 2 days a week. And dentistry is cool where you can actually work 2 days a week, make a good living. And that's a desirable shift for some dentists. When you're looking for someone, it doesn't need to be bringing someone in full-time. 2 days a week, I wouldn't recommend going less than two just for continuity of care. But 2 days a week, in my experience, has been enough to take some of that load off, add some clinical hours, and build that associate into the practice and let them gain some confidence and gain some patient base.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to new patients. Like you have to figure out a way to get some good new patient flow. Freedom in dental ownership comes from new patient flow. You could do all sorts of stuff. You can drop insurances. You can expand capacity. You can expand your hours. You can bring on associates. You can do all these things, but you can't do any of it without new patients.
Patients. Without patients.
New. They have to be new.
I would add one other point because like you mentioned, you get to a point where like, man, I'm just going to throw somebody in here, right? Be very cautious. Like go slow.
Yeah, I've done that and it didn't go well.
Because the worst thing you can do, I'm sure we've all had this experience. You've had times where associate doesn't work out. You've had to fire them. They didn't work out for another reason. When they leave, they'll leave presents. Presents are things that have to be redone. A crown that pops off because the prep was terrible. And who do you think has to do that at no charge for goodwill of the practice? So always make sure that you're doing it, but you're doing it correctly. And it's a whole nother conversation about like red flags for people associates when you're doing the interview process. That's a whole nother conversation, but do your due diligence and go slower rather than fast.
I used to just announce it on the Facebook page as soon as they started. And I don't do that anymore. Because nothing looks worse than you just constantly announcing a new doctor every 3 or so months.
It's the practice is growing so fast.
Then what happens is the patients are like, dude, there's another new person. There's another person. Forget this. I'm just going to say only Dr. Etch and nobody else. And then that's going to be a failure.
Yeah, absolutely. So like one quick question, we got a few more minutes left, is there's a lot of talk, I see it on the Dental Nachos forum, is that working interviews for associates. I feel like people get very heated on this conversation. And I'll say I've never done a working interview with an associate and I don't know what the heat's about. But I think it is very important when they start working in your practice that you take some post-op x-rays. And I will sneak in and I will let my assistant know, like, hey, if I give you a little head nod, I want you to take x-rays and tell this patient it's for the insurance. Because I want to check this, because nothing is worse than realizing big gingival gaps on class twos a year later.
I tell the doctor that we're going to do that. When they first start, I want to see pictures of their impressions. I want to see post-op x-rays of their composites. And we're going to have that conversation up front and say, this is what we're going to do. And if that's too much for you, that's cool. But maybe this isn't the place for you, because I need to make sure that there's a certain level of care that we're going to deliver to our patients. So I'm very upfront with the doctor, and I hope that they know that we're just trying to create a certain level of excellence.
Yeah, and that's true. And I should add in that the doctors do know I'm doing this, but I don't want them to know it's this procedure. So it's kind of a little head nod to the assistant. That's why it's not every single procedure.
We do it like in two parameters. Number one is the mental one. So I'll just have them. We never do a working interview. I've never done that ever. So number one is come into the practice any day you want to. We're not picking a day. You pick it. And I just want you to kind of get a good flow of the office, and I'll just have like somebody kind of just let them do whatever, like show them around, let them see what the normal flow of the office is and the systems. And during that same day, invite them to go to lunch on the office with our leadership team, not with me, with the leadership team. And what that does is that will weed a lot of stuff out. That will weed personality things out. Like if they're rude to a waiter, like, dude, that's a no-no. You're done. We're not even going to move forward. But if all that passes, then the first month or so, we will keep them with the same trusted DA2 that's been with the office a long time. And I just kind of get those, like the feedback, like how is the dentistry? How does it look? That's how we do it. So it's similar, but maybe a little bit different.
That's such good onboarding for that doctor too, to have that trusted dental assistant who knows where everything is. That's such a great tip. Anyone, I know it's hard for the doctor to give up their assistant, but for anyone who's wants to have that associate be successful, giving them someone who knows their way around the office is going to be such a blessing for them.
Yeah, the mistake that the doctor will do is, I'm up here, I'm the doctor in the practice. I still got my number one dental assistant that's assisting me. Now we've got the brand new doctor. Maybe they're like a couple years out of school and you got an entry-level assistant. That's the recipe for disaster. You got to balance it out a little bit. So when you're getting into this associate game, you got to be a giver. Give up your day or two. Give up the new patients. Give up your assistant. Be a giver.
Yeah, that's so true. And it just, you mentioned the how to weed them out by going taking them out to dinner or taking them out to lunch. I used to have this theory that the cleanliness of the inside of somebody's car will reflect on how well this employee is. And over the years, that has been proven wrong. I don't want a blanket statement, females, but I would just say that most of them kind of got a little bit of a mess in their car. If they have
kids. What's your car looking like?
My car looks detailed almost all the time. I don't let the kids eat in it. And they're always like, why? I'm like, no. And every now and then they'd say, you know what? I'm older now. I can handle it. And then they fail me every time, every single time.
A third row of my car is covered in whatever food. I don't know. There's probably this French fry from like 2018 in there. I guarantee it.
Yeah. You and I wouldn't get hired by Paul. We'd have trouble.
Yeah. Well, it'll end up okay, Henry.
Dude, I had like a Starbucks in there that like every day I got in there, I'm just like, something's not right. So, until it got to the point where like I had to climb back in that third row and it was like milk and curded and I couldn't get the smell out. I ozoned it. It never went away. I had to trade in the car. I didn't trade in the car because of that smell, but I was happy when it was gone. I would just say that. Yeah. So, all right, guys, thanks so much for being on the show. If you guys want us to tackle a specific question, send me an email, dentalpracticeheroes@gmail.com, or go to dentalpracticeheroes.com and there's a contact form you can utilize there. And we will talk to you next time. Were you one of the lucky dentists that got a tax surprise this year? Nothing like thinking that you have more money only to get that wiped away by a tax return. Or are you wondering why you are driving blind all year long, not knowing what your expenses are, what they should be, or how they compare to other dentists just like you? Enter Bull Moose Financial, a full-service accounting firm to handle your payroll, bookkeeping, tax compliance, tax returns and filings, as well as tax planning. And by tax planning, I mean knowing what you're going to owe well before the year is even over. I'm Paul Etchison, and I endorse working with Bull Moose. They were my CPA for many years, and if you want a responsive dental-specific CPA that will free you up from the burden of bookkeeping payroll and be attentive to your special needs as a dental practice owner, go to bullmoosefinancial.com. That's Bull, B-U-L-L, moosefinancial.com. Mention the Dental Practice Heroes podcast, and they will waive your $2,000 onboarding fee. So sign yourself up, and rest assured you know your CPA is doing all they can do to help and support your dental practice.